The next case is 05-1531, Disciplinary Counsel versus George Potman III. Mr. Hollenbaugh.
Good morning. Chief Justice Moyer, members of the court. This case is a case involving an incident that occurred in an office on January 2nd, 2003, that occurred under some very extraordinary sorts of circumstances that occurred when electricity was off in an office. This is an office that is located on the street level, immediately adjacent to the sidewalk. And because the power was off in the block, or that part of the block, and in this building in particular, a meeting was previously scheduled and a brief meeting was held in the reception area just inside the front door by the window facing the street. Excuse me. The meeting lasted a maximum of 20 minutes. There was no one else there because the receptionist, in order for there to be privacy with the client, was asked to go next door to Mr. Quatman's wife's law office that is immediately next door to Mr. Quatman's law office. Mr. Quatman at this point in time was a practitioner with one partner who was his brother, who was in the process of moving his practice to become a full-time magistrate. That occurred in July of 2003, and there are allegations that were made with respect to whether or not there was some improper touching which occurred during that meeting. At the hearing of this matter, it was contested as to exactly what occurred and what touching did occur. One of the panel members would have dismissed this case for lack of evidence. The other two panel members found that there was a violation in that there was an improper touching of the complainant's breasts. There was an admission that there was touching because this particular complainant had implants to control pain. She had had some 8 surgeries. She had significant scarring throughout her body. She was in pain, and she was there to visit with a lawyer to see about a divorce because her husband and she were no longer compatible. There was concern about him being an alcoholic, and she was concerned that she had contributed to that. It was not the situation that was very conducive to a long conversation because it was taking place in the reception area of the office. This occurred in July of 2003. Over the next 6 months, a number of things occurred in Mr. Quatman's life that were very disconcerting and very difficult for him. His brother left the practice, leaving him alone, so he was now a complete sole practitioner in his office. There were a number of problems that occurred throughout that period that are reflected in the record, such as construction problems, problems with family members, a son who was causing a number of concerns, and there were problems that were within the family. Over the course of that period of time, about Thanksgiving, what was otherwise a fairly strong pattern of heavy drinking became alcoholism. And in this case, Mr. Quatman began to drink more heavily. And which later led to seizures and being admitted to the hospital. It wasn't until December 23rd, some 6 months after this 20-minute conversation in Mr. Quatman's office, that he was informed that there had been a complaint filed. He received it 2 days before Christmas in December of 03, and was required to make a quick response after the holidays to that. The alcohol problem that he had been increasing and developed further to the point where on February the 8th of 2004, he had a seizure, several seizures at home, additional seizures at the hospital, and was admitted to the emergency room in Lima with all the symptoms of alcoholic hepatitis with cirrhosis, significant DTs. He was placed on a ventilator. He was put into intensive care, and he remained hospitalized for 2 weeks. While he was hospitalized for that two-week period, he was consulted with a psychologist who is an alcohol expert, who is board certified, and who was well qualified to help with the alcohol problem that had become so severe with Mr. Quatman. That psychologist was instrumental in having Mr. Quatman go from his two-week stay in the hospital to a month-long stay at Shepherd Hill. There was this six-week period of time when Mr. Quatman was completely away from his family and from his practice. And during that period of time, the problems that had led to this even further exacerbated, because he was not there to deal with the problems, he was not there to deal with his son, he wasn't there to deal with the family issues, the construction issues, and the practice. Nonetheless, he returned to his office in March of 04 and was faced with the community, the small community in Lima, of returning from an alcohol program, and he was no longer the person that he was when he left. It's pretty clear from the record that prior to that time, Mr. Quatman was the life of the party. He was the jester for the State Bar Association for two terms, which exemplifies the kind of personality and outgoing person that he was. He now returns to home and has to face his clients, his family, his church, and all the members in the community as transitioning from that personality to that being a person who can no longer have alcohol. I should note that that was almost 2 years ago, and Mr. Quatman has not had a drink in that 2 years. Mr. Quatman has continued to see the psychologist on a regular basis and has continued to remain alcohol-free during that period of time and has made substantial commitments in his life along those lines to remain alcohol-free. When Mr. Quatman returned, he began seeing Dr. Schaefer on a regular basis, and he dealt with the other issues that were surrounding the problems which had led to the breakdown. In the course of dealing with those other issues, returning to the community as a new and different person, returning to his practice as a new and different person, he also had the issue facing him of this disciplinary complaint. It had not yet been formalized and had not been filed, but nonetheless he was still dealing with it, and he was having a very difficult time dealing with it. In fact, he did not even mention it to his wife, who is a lawyer and who practices in the building next, until August of 2004. That revelation to her took place in Dr. Schaefer's office, and It was at that time that he first began to confront the issue and really take charge of this particular matter. The hearing of this matter was in this building and lasted for 2 days. During the course of that hearing, there were witnesses identified and called, including character witnesses for Mr. Quatman. Those character witnesses clearly said that he was a pillar of the community. He had 35 years of an unblemished record within the community. And as indicated in the report by the panel, he has had an exemplary legal career, a family career, a community career, and has contributed significantly to the profession as well as to his family. The panel, however, or the majority of the panel, seemed from the beginning to doubt the sincerity of Mr. Quatman, and have found throughout the report that there were a number of things that occurred during the course of the investigation and during the course of the hearing that were less than genuine. The third panel member, of course, saw things the other way and would dismiss. Nonetheless, there are two issues that are competing and two issues that are at odds here. One is the incident itself and exactly what happened. Mr. Quatman has steadfastly denied that he fondled the breasts of this person who was in his office. He has admitted that he may have touched. He certainly admitted that he placed his hands on the implants that were displayed to him, and that clearly could be improper. There were some comments made at the time that clearly could be improper. But he is steadfast.
Why were the implants displayed to him?
Because they were the complainant in this case was there for a consultation for divorce, and as part of the reasons why her life was in such tragedy were the number of operations that she had had and the amount of pain that she was experiencing. And during that conversation, she indicated to Mr. Quatman that she had electrical implants that she could use to control the pain, and she stood and displayed those to him. It was during that point in time that he placed his hand or his hand was placed on those implants to demonstrate where they were. Whether or not that is improper, and especially under those circumstances, is for the court to decide. It's not something that would occur in many law offices. Nonetheless, that did occur. What I want to point out, though, is that between the time of that incident and when this matter finally came for hearing, there was a significant period of time within which Mr. Quatman experienced severe alcohol problems, from which he has entered the road to full recovery, and he continues to this day to adhere to his principles that he will abstain from alcohol. I also wanted to point out that the community is strongly behind Mr. Quatman. The testimony in this case from Mr. Leonard, who is a well-known counsel in the Lima area, spoke extremely highly of Mr. Quatman and spoke of his value in the community. I should point out that as Mr. Quatman is a third-generation lawyer, there are many clients that are long-term clients within that practice. And that to suspend, as has been required, Mr. Quatman for a significant period of time would greatly affect a number of probate, estate, guardianship, and other clients that require daily, weekly, or monthly attention.
Counsel, what's the nature of your client's practice?
Sole practitioner. He does civil, trial work, domestic, probate, guardianships, those sorts of things.
His grandfather, during this period of time, was there any complaints about his professional performance in keeping up with the workload?
No, not that I'm aware of.
While he was undergoing this alcoholic, lifestyle, he still was able to function effectively at work?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hollenbaugh, is that why the board in its recommendation talks about his alleged alcoholism as an excuse? I mean, it seems that all of the statements you've made about the two-week hospitalization and so on, would that not have been before the panel? And was there a reason why they chose to discount any evidence presented regarding his alcoholism?
That is a complete mystery to me, because the record is clear, the medical records are clear, the intake report at the hospital are clear that it was for alcohol dependency, for cirrhosis, for all those things that are clear symptoms of alcohol, and the diagnosis by the psychologist that he has been seeing since has clearly indicated that as well. So I'm not sure where the panel or the majority of the panel came with the quotes, the alleged alcoholism. It's pretty clear.
Thank you, Mr. Hollenbaugh.
You're welcome.
Mr. Caligiuri.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. Joseph Caligiuri, Assistant Disciplinary Counsel for Relator. I would first like to address a few points that Mr. Hollenbaugh made. First, with respect to the mitigation evidence of respondent's alleged alcoholism, the board considered his testimony. They heard everything that Mr. Hollenbaugh stated to you today, and they decided in the end that it did not constitute mitigation evidence because the respondent himself testified that alcohol played no role in the misconduct. And the board went on to say that it should be considered as aggravation evidence because, it was inappropriately put forth initially as an excuse for his behavior.
Well, counsel, is that that there was no alcohol consumed that day? He was sober when this went on.
Correct.
But the subsequent hospitalization and then the inpatient treatment at Shepherd Hill, I find it difficult to believe that the hospital would extend treatment and Shepherd Hill would accept an inpatient for a month if there wasn't a genuine alcohol abuse problem.
I agree wholeheartedly, and I agree there was a genuine alcohol problem. The problem is that the respondent himself testified that he did not become an alcoholic until after this incident occurred, which was in July of 2003. He stated in his testimony, and was very clear, he only became an alcoholic at the latter part of 2003 in December, and then stopped drinking in February. So he was only, according to his testimony, an alcoholic for 3 months, and now is in lifetime recovery.
All right, counsel,
But yet, you say that alcohol played no part in this incident, yet he can't remember clearly what happened that day.
Well, if you believe the respondent's testimony that he can't remember what happened clearly that day, you would come to that conclusion. But the facts of the matter are this. The respondent initially, when he responded to the allegations, stated that he could not remember the incident, but he emphatically denied the allegations, and he denied touching her in any manner whatsoever. Just a few months after that, he changed his story, and he stated he may have touched her, but his alcoholism was to blame. Then, at the hearing, he changed his testimony again to say, drinking had nothing to do with this, and now I remember that I didn't touch her. She actually grabbed my hands and placed them on her implants.
My understanding was, from the briefs and that, was not that he was alleging that he was drunk when the incident occurred, but it affected his ability to recall. And if you look at the medical history and what he went through, the stages he was at the level of his alcoholism, one can accept that proposition. I take it the panel did not accept that?
Well, and there are a couple reasons
why. Or two of the panel members, at least.
There are a couple reasons why. First, respondent initially stated to his psychologist, he admitted that he misled his psychologist because he told his psychologist that he was actively drinking, including drinking on the day of the incident. And he was asking his psychologist to make a connection for mitigation purposes between his misconduct and his alcoholism. And then later on, when supposedly his memory cleared up, even after he realized that he did not touch Ms. Entine's breast, according to his testimony, 2 weeks later, he sat down in a face-to-face meeting with the grievant and her lawyer and told them, I cannot deny the allegations. So clearly, throughout the 16 months between his first response and the hearing, he was trying to misuse his alleged alcoholism as an excuse, and then he wanted to say, I wasn't drunk that day, I just can't remember what happened. But he testified that he did remember what happened.
Was the claimant at the hearing, did she testify at the hearing?
Oh, yes.
So the panel got a chance to observe her?
Yes, and the panel actually made a determination that when comparing both of their credibility, that the grievant was far more credible than the respondent.
How do you explain that one panel seems to be so far in disagreement to want to dismiss it entirely?
It's an excellent point. We really don't know from the lone dissenter's dissent why he reached that conclusion. He offered no explanation. He just said relator did not prove their case. But there are a couple things that I think it's very important that this court draw from the transcript. And that is, during the lone dissenter's questioning of the victim in this case, he clearly abandoned his neutrality. Not only did the panel chair sustain relator's objections to the manner in which the lone dissenter was questioning the grievant, but the panel chair himself, on three separate occasions, objected to the hostile manner that the lone dissenter displayed towards the grievant. And second, during that hostile questioning, if you read the grievant's responses to his questions, she was remarkably consistent all the way through, despite the badgering. I think that's a very important point. But there are three reasons why this court should suspend the respondent's license to practice law for 6 months, which was the board's recommendation. First, the respondent fondled his client's breasts. And second, when he was confronted with the allegations, he misrepresented his involvement right from the start all the way through and including the hearing. And third, the case law supports the recommended sanction.
Well, counsel, if from the start he said, yep, I did it, what would be the punishment then?
Well, I would think that we are looking at a different punishment if he admitted his misconduct. And you can look at some other cases and say, for instance, the Moore case, where this court was moved by the mitigation, the acceptance of responsibility. It didn't happen here. There are a host of aggravating factors.
What happened in the Moore case?
In the Moore case, there was a stayed suspension. Mr. Moore was suspended for, I believe, a period of 2 years stayed, or 1 year stayed with 2 years probation, for making inappropriate sexual comments, and then in another count, engaging in consensual sex with a client. And Mr. Moore admitted his misconduct. He took responsibilities for his actions, and there was significant mitigating evidence and no aggravating evidence. In this case, it's completely different because respondent did not only deny his misconduct, the board found that he told multiple stories, that he misrepresented his memory, and he misstated the role of his alcoholism. He engaged in deceptive practices and submitted false statements. He preyed on a vulnerable victim, and he acted with a selfish motive. And that's what distinguishes this case and demands a 6-month suspension. Just 2 months ago, in the case of disciplinary counsel versus Freeman, this court suspended Mr. Freeman for 6 months for photographing a client in various states of undress in return for money. And then after the representation ended, Mr. Freeman solicited that client to perform sex acts in return for money. But there are three factors that distinguish the Freeman case from respondent's conduct. First, in Freeman, Mr. Freeman never touched his client. Second, the client and Freeman consented to the photographs. And third, there were no aggravating factors. In this case, we have a sexual groping of a client, physical contact, lack of consent, and a host of aggravating factors. Clearly, this case warrants at least a 6-month suspension that was handed down in Freeman. And just a year ago, in Akron Bar Association versus Williams, this court suspended an attorney for 2 years and suspended 18 months for a client who engaged in consensual sex with a client, I'm sorry, for an attorney that engaged with in consensual sex with a client and then lied about it under oath. Again, a couple of things to consider with regard to the Williams case. One, it was a consensual sexual relationship. In the case that we have today, there was no consent to the physical attack. And second, in the Williams case, the only reason why we know that Mr. Williams lied under oath is because at the time of the hearing, he admitted his misconduct. The board found in our case that respondent never took responsibility for his actions, that he misstated the role of alcoholism, that he misrepresented his memory, and that when he was confronted with the choice to admit his misconduct or mislead those scrutinizing his behavior, he chose the latter. And he did it for a period of 16 months. He misled his wife, he misled the grievant, he misled the grievant's lawyer, he misled relator, he misled his own lawyer, he misled his own psychologist, and he misled the panel. And for those reasons, the respondent should be suspended for 6 months. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Caligiuri. Mr. Hollenbaugh, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
I would ask the court to take a close look at the inconsistencies that are cited, because those inconsistencies are not inconsistencies and they're minor discrepancies that occur over a period of time with repeated questioning over the same sorts of things, especially with relate to the claim that the mitigation statements made to the psychologist were done for the purpose of connecting that with the mitigation in the disciplinary action. He was in treatment at the time. He was speaking with his psychologist. He was trying to get well.
Counsel, does your client still maintain that he was an alcoholic for 3 months and was able to contract alcohol-related hepatitis of the liver and all the other maladies that went along with that in 3 months?
No, ma'am. No, that's the onset of severe problems took place around Thanksgiving, but before that he had been a heavy drinker for a long time. So it was at that point in time that the severe problems began to manifest themselves over Thanksgiving and into the balance of the year that resulted in the several seizures and the hospitalizations in February. We think that a suspension in this case with some significant guidance would be appropriate with Olaf, with continued treatment with his psychologist, and with those sorts of things that are generally appropriate in this sort of a case. Thanks very much.
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.